Happy New Year and welcome in to episode number 6 of the 48 Minutes Podcast. I'm Ross Geiger, the host of the show. Back in the house today, we've got Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media reporting live from the Sunshine State. And we're also joined by our other wonderful co-host, World B, Michael Freer. Bruce, welcome back. Just want to start off the show by pointing out that two of our favorite teams in the Bucks and Celtics haven't won a single game this year.
I know. And, you know, it's funny. I know we're going to do the power rankings later, and there's going to be a little bit of upheaval in there. But I want to talk about your team on my opening comment. Basically, I'm wondering, should we be worried about the Bucks? They've lost 5 of their last 6 by a total of 76 points. That's a little over 15 a game. Giannis, of course, continues to be MVP worthy. But Middleton, you know, he only played for about a 2-week stretch there. He's only played 7 games. He's been out, you know, for going on 3 weeks now. When he was playing, he was only shooting 32.5%. And now I'm a little worried about Jrue Holiday's health. He's missed the last few games. He's north of 30 years old now. He's played really well this year, but he's missed 10 games. So, Ross, I want to see your boys get themselves back together.
Yeah, I've definitely got my fair share of concerns as well with the team and just the injuries going on in Milwaukee at this time. And as World B and I had talked about, you know, Joe Ingles hasn't really been able to step up and perform at the level I think we were all anticipating him to have on the Bucks and the impact he can bring offensively. So that's a cause of concern. And yeah, I'm a little worried. I mean, they definitely need to get things rolling here very soon. World B, what you got?
As for me, Rods, another one of your guys that you like, Pascal Siakam, is one of the guys I want to give a shout-out to as my opening tip. 7 straight 25-point games, including a 52-pointer against my Knicks there back in late December. He's been really on a tear lately, and he just doesn't get the publicity probably that he should. But as we were talking about off-air, just how many people really know that this is a 2-time All-NBA selection? You know, last year he was 3rd team. A few years ago, he was 2nd team. I mean, he's a really talented. This year, he's one of 4 guys who's averaging 25, 8, and 6. The other 3 guys on the list are Luka, Jokic, and LeBron. That's pretty good company for a guy who doesn't get a whole lot of pub.
Yeah, not bad company at all. I have a quick story on Pascal Siakam. I worked with an incredibly talented young lady by the name of Tori Miller. She was a front office intern for Phoenix. We used to always love talking about the draft with one another pregame and, you know, after practices and whatnot. She told me about this guy out of New Mexico State by the name of Pascal Siakam, that I should keep an eye on him because I always like draft sleepers. And boy, was she right. She hit the nail on the head with that one. So props to you, Tori. And she's off to an successful and exciting career as a general manager with the Atlanta Hawks G League team. So my opening take is something that actually happened earlier today and involves the Phoenix Suns. Suns played an early afternoon game at Madison Square Garden against the Knicks, and something happened that I don't believe I've ever seen before. The Suns ended up scoring a grand total of 11 points in the first quarter, with DeAndre Ayton having 6 points and Mikal Bridges having 5 points. The rest of the team put up a donut, going 0 for 12 from the field. Suns ended the game only 83 points on the night. No player on the Suns scored more than 12. Just incredibly bad.
That's a hot mess right there, right now in Phoenix, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, right now the Suns have as many losses as the Warriors. They're right there, I think, at number 7 now after today's game. And they're kind of in the same boat as Golden State. I mean, we've given Golden State a lot of concern, and rightfully so with Curry's injury. But now with Booker out in Phoenix, I mean, they're both in the same sailboat at this time trying to get back on track. So we'll have to keep an eye on those two teams. Last year, the Suns only lost 18 games for an entire season. It's January 2nd, and they've already reached that mark of 18 losses. Pretty different year for them. So
it's yeah,
very concerning it there.
Is.
But let's get right into
Mike was happy with today's game, though, wasn't he?
You can focus on the Suns. I would tend to look at it from the other way.
Yeah,
pretty dominating defensive effort.
Yeah, and Brunson's return to the Knicks, much needed return of Jalen Brunson, and quickly had another strong game too. So good to see both those guards playing well for Tom Thibodeau. Guys, let's get right into our first quarter here. On Sunday night, we had the NBA conference leaders face off, and boy, did the Nuggets just hammer Bruce's Boston Celtics. Bruce, give us a little thoughts on what you saw.
Well, first of all, Denver is making me a believer big time. What they did last night, I mean, look, Nikola Jokic is a given. On any given night, he's just as likely to get a triple-double as not, okay? But what I saw, well, and I think last night or Sunday night was one of his most efficient performances that I've seen. Dude had 30 points on 13 field goal attempts, okay? That's, you know, 30, he had 30, 12, and 12. He had zero turnovers, okay? 12 assists, zero turnovers. He, in the first quarter, he had 14 points and three assists. He totally set the tone for that game. But what was really, really impressive to me, besides the fact that they were shooting like 57% for the game and 57% on threes, the role players for them were awesome. Bruce Brown was like a jolt of adrenaline for those guys. He had 8 points in the first quarter, 8 points in the third. He had 21, 4 out of 6 on threes. Bones Highland played 19 minutes, 17 points, okay? He had 3 dagger threes in the fourth quarter in about a 2.5-minute stretch. When Boston looked like they maybe might be able to inch their way back in, Bones shut him down. Michael Porter Jr., often injured, right? He had 11 in the third quarter. He did in the third quarter what Bones did in the fourth quarter. Whenever Boston had a good shot to get a little closer, he would come back and bury him. And Aaron Gordon, who you have been on all season, Ross, had another excellent game, 18, 6, and 7, plus 23. So Denver beat them every way you can beat them and really looked like the vastly superior team to Boston.
Yeah,
and let's we'll talk about the backboard in a minute too, though. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump in on you there. Sorry.
I was just about to get to that. I mean, look, you know, watching that game, kind of looking over the box score, what really stood out was the Nuggets dominated every long stoppage of play, winning that first quarter 37-28. After halftime, entering the third, they outscored the Celtics 36-31, and then even after that backboard incident that took about a half hour of stoppage. In the middle of the fourth, the Nuggets came out and really put the Celtics to bed. I thought that stoppage would have helped and maybe benefited the Celtics regrouping and kind of having that strong final push to tie things up and make things a little interesting. And that just wasn't the case.
You know, they really, like you say, they really jumped on Boston early, 37 points in the first quarter. They're offensive efficiency was 142.3 per 100 possessions. That's ridiculous. They had an effective field goal percentage of almost 74%. And, you know, they finished with 120.6 offensive efficiency. For the third game in a row, they've had 120 or better. So they're really rolling these days. And they did it against a team that's really playing better defensively in the Celtics. They've really gotten themselves back the defense to where we know it can be, top 10 level. And they really had their way with them. 17 threes. They're tough to beat every team is tough to beat when you get 15 threes most of the nights, but they're 8-1 this year when they get at least 15 threes. They had 17 last night. So it's really, they're hard to beat when they're playing that well on offense. You really have to, play an elite defensive game to get them.
You know, Boston has, you know, really done well this year shooting threes. They've had a good percentage, but they were dismal on Sunday night. They were only 27%, you know, 9 out of 33. So sometimes, you know, when I watch them have a night like that shooting threes, I really start to scratch my head and say, gee, guys, you know, is it time to maybe stop shooting them? You know, yeah. I realize that's your game, but I think you also kind of have to know sometimes, look, you know, shots aren't falling. We got to try and get to the hoop, maybe get fouled. I mean, and if you make a couple free throws, it might be easier to shoot some threes because you're now seeing the ball go in. And I think that's something that a lot of times they frustrate me when they do that. But getting back to the whole Time Lord thing. I totally agree with what you said, Ross. I thought that that was going to be a huge break for Boston because Denver had been smoking hot all night. And I'm thinking, okay, anything to stop their momentum. Boston didn't have any momentum, so there wasn't really concern that their momentum was going to stop. I thought, if anything, okay, maybe Denver might cool off a little bit. But they really showed me a lot. And look, they're hot as can be. They've won 10 of the last 12. They're 14-3 at home. They're the number one team in the West. And they deserve to be there. I mean, I am a believer.
Yeah, I am as well. We've obviously talked about them on previous pods as well. And they just continue to further impress us. And this was just another example of that, beating the best team in the East in the Boston Celtics. And it's going to be tough to stop them come playoff time. I think Mr. Efficient and Joker is going to create a lot of problems. And when they have guys like Bruce Brown, as you alluded to, Bruce, playing at a high level as well, they're a very scary team. So definitely need to keep an eye on them. Now heading into our second quarter, let's talk a little bit about the power rankings and go ahead and rank either our first or worst teams in the NBA. And World B, we'll get started off with you.
Well, I'll tell you, my on the power rankings of the top three, I put at number three, I got the Celtics. They had been, you know, probably everybody's number one for a couple of months. And they're still, obviously, last night was a slip-up, he would say, because they had been playing better. You know, they had won four straight before that loss there. They're back to being the number one offensive team in the league with their efficiency at 117.2 points per 100 possessions. Their defense is in the top 10 now. They've gotten that back to where, you know, at the start of the year, it was just all offense, and their defense was in the bottom 10 or in the 20s. They've worked it back up to be in a top 10 defense. They're a solid team to me. Obviously, they're a contender for the title. Number two, I have the Brooklyn Nets. Until the Nets want to, you know, decide to lose a game here, 11 straight wins. They're 22-6 since November 2nd. That's the best in the league. And, you know, they're number three in offense over that stretch. They're number six in defense. They just have it all together right now, and they have some of the best, most talent on the court every night between Kyrie and KD. That's, you know, two of the most talented players. You're usually going to have the two best players on the court most nights. So that's a good formula to have. And we just talked about them. There's really not a whole lot more to say about the Denver Nuggets. They are clearly, to me, the number one team. They've won 7 out of 8. And it's not just that they've won 7 out of 8. Their last 7 games, they're 6-1, and the one loss was to Sacramento by a point. But 5 of those 6 teams during that little stretch, you know, the last 7 games, have been really good defensive teams. And they've really done away with all of them. So, you know, it's hard to find a problem with the Nuggets. Their defense is getting a little bit better. That was what we talked about a few weeks ago. Can their defense step up? And it stepped up. So right now, that's where I have the top three.
All right, Bruce.
Okay, well, Michael and I are more or less on the same page. We have the same three teams, but in a slightly different order. I also have Boston at number three right now. They are 26-11, best overall record, best road record, 11-6. But only 5-6 in their last 11 games. Okay, so when you're playing, you know, under 500 for a, you know, 2/3 of a month, whatever, I have a hard time putting you at the top unless you had a huge gap. And it's not going to get any easier for them moving forward. They play 9 of their next 12 on the road. They're at Dallas on Thursday, which you know who's going to be in that game, and he has a great history of crushing Boston in games. A week from Thursday, they're at Brooklyn, okay? And then they're at Miami on January 24th. And you might say, Miami, no big deal. But they've won 7 out of 10, and they're starting to get their act together. Tyler Hero is playing much better. So they're always going to be – and they in Boston just truly do not like each other. So that will be – and I actually hope to attend that game while I'm down here in Florida. I'm going to see if I can make it on January 24th. So Boston's number three. Number two – I have Denver, the aforementioned. Michael told you pretty much everything you need to know about them. 8 wins in their last 10, number one in the West, 24-12. And number one right now, I have got the Brooklyn Nets. As wow. much as I hate to say that, 11 straight wins. They're playing San Antonio tonight, and they're up by almost 30 points in the fourth quarter. So that's going to be 12 straight wins for them. KD's averaging nearly 30, 29.7. Kyrie averaging over 26. Lethal 1-2 punch. Again, role players doing it for them. Ben Simmons has been, we talked about him a little bit last week. He's been awesome. He's playing power forward now. He's no longer trying to be a point guard that can't shoot or make free throws. He's dishing. He's defending. He's rebounding. Brooklyn's got it all going on, and big ups to those guys. So I have them number one right now, Ross.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And while definitely not taking anything away from this Brooklyn run, you know, if we went back a month, I don't think I would have bet on you guys having them in your top two for your power rankings. That's for sure. So it's been quite the December and start of the new year for the Nets. Now, I, of course, decided to spice things up. I am going to do the worst three teams in the league. Third worst team is the Detroit Pistons at 10-29. Losing Cade Cunningham for the season was just such a dagger to that squad. And what I appreciate most about this team, glass half full, is that they totally just acknowledged it. I mean, this team has inserted Jalen Duren into the starting unit. Duren's the youngest player in the NBA this season and has made the most of his opportunities. In the month of December alone, Duren had 9 games in which he grabbed at least 11 rebounds. So there are some fun signs of the future for Pistons fans and NBA fans alike to watch. But 10 wins, yikes. Number two is another team with 10 wins. It's the Charlotte Hornets. They are 10-27. They went 4-12 for the month of December, which included an 8-game losing streak. And this past month, the team was able to even get back LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward, both valuable pieces to that roster. And they're back in the lineup, and it really hasn't mattered. They just continue to struggle. And at this point, I just beg Steve Clifford to free Kai Jones, let him develop. And much like LaMelo, he's at least a ton of fun to watch. So he's a fun guy to just let loose and let him be athletic. I would like to see him out on the floor more. And my number one team would be a team in Texas, the Houston Rockets, also a 10-win team, if you're seeing a theme here. They're 10-26, and I think their veteran, longtime shooting guard, Eric Gordon, said it best when asked about the team's improvement recently, from you know, the improvement now to where they started at the beginning of the season. He said, quote, "There's been no improvement." Yikes, to get that from your veteran leader in the locker room. They're 2-8 in their last 10 games. And at this point, my hope for Houston moving forward is allowing Tari Eason to play at least 20 minutes. He's starting to kind of develop that trend. I really hope that's something they kind of shift to moving forward. His activity is infectious and should become an important piece to this young nucleus in the future. And as we've talked about on prior pods, they have a great future. It's just not this year. So hopefully they can get Aaron Gordon out of town and go ahead and play some of these youngsters, because other than that, it's been a dumpster fire. So those are my three worst teams.
Eric Gordon.
Did I say Aaron? Okay. Yeah. My bad. Eric Gordon.
You know, talking about Charlotte, tonight LeBron James has a 41-piece working against them right now. It's almost over. But the Lakers no longer are horrible enough to make your bottom three, I guess.
Well, you know what's funny about your list, Ross? You mentioned Detroit and Houston. The excuse being they're going young. They're going with the youth movement there with those guys. Those are two of the three top three teams in terms of playing rookies and second-year players that get the most minutes, the highest percentage. Those are two of the top teams there. The Hornets don't have an excuse. They're just a lousy team. They have the worst shooter in the league right now in Terry Rozier, who I understand he had to play point while LaMelo was gone. He had to handle the point guard duties. So and Dennis Smith was gone, their backup. So he had to handle that, and he did a decent job. But he just can't shoot. It's horrendous. And you thought, you know, maybe they get that back their lineup, like you said, they get some of those big three in there. Hasn't helped.
Do you really think Houston's worse than San Antonio? San Antonio's awful.
I mean, they at least play competitively. They've got some guys like
Tonight, notwithstanding.
Yeah,
what's that, Mike?
Tonight, notwithstanding.
They seem to play a little bit more team basketball. They still play within Pop's Spurs system. They're just not very capable of executing it at the level you need to in the NBA. But I don't know. I think these three young teams are just the bottom of the barrel. And I tried to find glimpses of hope of why we should still be watching these teams, because I do think that's very important for us to have a feel for them moving forward. But
by the way, quickly gaining traction to get down to bottom to the team I gave props to a couple of episodes ago in the Orlando Magic. Because ever since I started singing their praises, they've gone right in the pooper. Not to mention the fight they have. It's been awful. There's another team that's going young, but they are at least playing well, and they have this talent, but they cannot shoot. And it's just now they can't defend. So that's a nice combination if you want to make the bottom three.
Yeah, a little teaser for your World B. They're actually going to be in my betting portion of today's segment, so stay tuned for that. All right.
I'm not going anywhere.
Heading into quarter three, let's talk about a team that we've been pretty silent on. And, you know, shame on us for that, because this team is currently on pace to win 20 more games than they were projected to at the beginning of the season. And only five teams have ever done that since the 2000-2001 season. So that team is the Indiana Pacers, who currently sit sixth in the Eastern Conference standings. They've won five of their past six games with victories over the Celtics, the Heat, the Hawks, the Cavs, and most recently the Clippers. I think it's safe to say that those victories over those five teams are all teams that we thought would be way better than the Pacers heading into this year. And wanted to get your guys' thoughts on Indiana, and are they for real? Are they a team that's going to make the playoffs and not just maybe a play-in?
Mike, you want to start?
Oh, sure. I mean, they won five out of six. Their offense, which was a spark early on that wasn't really expected, has been on fire during those six games. They're averaging almost 120 points per 100 possessions over those six games. Buddy Hield is shooting lights out over his last eight games, 60%, over 60% on three-point range. They've had back-to-back 130-point games. I mean, it's just, you know, they had a lousy month of November offensively where they're in the bottom 10 in efficiency. Since December, they were in the upper half, just outside the top 10 at 12th, averaging about four more points per 100 possessions. So they've really improved in that area. They're shooting the ball, obviously, like I told you, with Buddy Hield. In December, they shot 56% in their effective field goal percentage, which was top 10. And they're really having a good run. Halliburton is looking like an all-star. And I'll let Bruce sing his praises.
Well, I'm a huge fan. You know, it's funny. You talk about Buddy Hield, you talk about Tyrese Halliburton. Those are two of the guys that came over from Sacramento, the trade that really has worked out for both teams. Sacramento is also better with, you know, Sabonis. But Halliburton, I mean, he's averaging almost 21. He's leading the league in assists, 10.2 a game. His assist to turnover ratio is 4-1, which is pretty outstanding. And he's number four in the league in steals, which I think is sometimes an overrated statistic because, you know, a lot of times guys gamble for steals. So it's maybe less significant than some other stats. But he's getting, you know, 1.7 of them a game. You mentioned Buddy Hield. He's, you know, averaging almost 18 a game for those guys. But Miles Turner has really been very, very good this season, kind of operating a little bit under the radar. He's averaging career highs in points, rebounds, field goal percentage, and three-point field goal percentage. The guy's been around forever, right? He's in his eighth NBA season. He's only 26. So he's really what I would call a young player, really, when you're 26. His best basketball is definitely in front of him. And, I mean, you know, he's averaging almost 17.
He has a contract year, too. Doesn't he have a contract? Isn't this a contract year for him?
It is a contract year,
Free agent after this year, so... Yeah, isn't it amazing how that works out?
but another thing, you know, that again, that we don't always talk about, you know, Rick Carlisle, man, he can just coach the hell out of any team. He'll take his five and beat you. He'll take your five and beat you. I mean, that guy just is one of the elite coaches. He's a Hall of Fame caliber coach, in my opinion. Also, somebody that I happen to be, you know, just a big fan of personally. That the team does have one pretty significant weakness, though, from what I can see. They're a really poor rebounding team outside of Miles Turner. They're number 29 in the league in rebound differential, okay? Dallas is worse. Yeah, only Dallas is worse.
Yeah.
One more note about Halliburton. I'm sorry. One more quick note. Only two players are touching the ball more, have more touches per game than Halliburton. Jokic and Harden. That's pretty good. Wow. The offense clearly goes through him.
Yeah, and I was tuned into that Sunday afternoon matchup against the Clippers in Indiana, and just the entire game, he controlled the entire flow of the game. I mean, as we know, the Clippers like to get up and down. They can get out of control at times. Kawhi Leonard, late in the third quarter, went on a huge scoring binge. I think he had 18 in the quarter alone. And the Pacers never wavered. They were right there behind their leader in Halliburton. And it just really blows my mind that there are people out there seriously debating whether or not Tyrese Halliburton is an all-star this year. Bruce, as you said, leads the league in assists, fourth in the league in steals, 20.9 points per game. And let me add in his field goal percentages for you. He's shooting 48.5% from the field, and he attempts 7.5 threes a game, and he's shooting those at a 40.9% clip. Just wow. Absurd stats this year, and he's got his team sixth in the Eastern Conference that nobody saw coming. I mean, what are we even talking about? I mean, this guy's an all-star.
They've become a reliable team at home. They're 12-7 at home, good percentage. And there's one other guy I wanted to mention, and you guys know him. Nobody really knows the right way to pronounce his last name. Benedict Mathurin, which he's from Quebec. He's French. It's actually pronounced officially Mathurin, okay? But nobody says that. He's probably the number two rookie in the league behind Mike's guy, Paolo. So 17.2 points a game as a rookie for that team, Benedict.
Yeah, and they got another sharp rookie in Andrew Nembhard out of Gonzaga. He's played very well for them. And another guy that surprised me on that team is Nesmith, coming over from Boston. Didn't really get a chance to play, but he shook off the cobwebs from the bench and kind of starts for that team now at almost a power forward position. He's put together a string of some good games as well. So goes back to Carlisle, as you mentioned, Bruce. Just an exceptional coach. He takes what he's given, and he makes the best out of it. And, they've played some games this year against some of the top teams in the league and have went toe-to-toe with them until the final buzzer. So props to you, Indiana. Happy for you guys. And I apologize for having not talked about you guys until now. So for Pacers fans out there, we're very sorry.
Please forgive us. Forgive us.
Yeah. So for the fourth quarter, I was thinking we'd have some fun on today's pod and do a little bit of word association. Bruce, I know this is a game that you like to have a lot of fun with. So I've picked out some topics, and you're just going to give us a word to go ahead and describe the topic I bring up. Are you guys game to play?
This is great, because we just, so everyone knows, we have no idea what Ross is going to tell us. So This is totally like off the cuff.
All right, so first topic here, Oklahoma City Thunder.
Sam Presti's program works everywhere.
Will be?
Youth coming to fruition. They're okay. A very, very talented team.
All right, I went with assets because they have so many draft picks.
I'll try to limit it to one word. I'll try and keep it to one word like you want.
Yeah, I think we should be able to say one word and then a brief explanation. Like,
perfect.
Shea Gilgis Alexander, he is a badass.
Yeah. So I went with assets. They currently own 31 future draft picks, including two first-rounders in each of the next two drafts. And in 2025, they have four first-rounders. It's just insane how many draft picks they have. And quite scary knowing that, of course, they do have SGA, some other young stars. And, of course, they also have Chet Holmgren that people have kind of forgotten about since he's been out this year. So they'll be a lot of fun to watch for the years to come in the draft and kind of see the nucleus that they
could use a shooter. They're young, so they're not a really good shooting team from the perimeter.
You know who's kind of a weird guy on that team that I really like watching? Alexei Pokushevsky. He's injured right now. He's 7 feet, 190.
Yeah.
That's legit. That's his official height and weight. 7 feet tall, 190 pounds. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
No, the weight room now, Alexei.
Yeah, he's got to get in there with Chet. I think they both could put on some lean muscle. Definitely couldn't hurt those two. All right, second topic here. Luka Doncic.
Unicorn, Hall of Famer at age 23, leading the Dallas Mavericks to a really bright future.
Impressive seems like hardly the word to use, but the one that comes to mind right now is, you know, it's every night comes it's something different with him. He does something that makes you look at the box score, you watch his highlights, and you just shake your head. It's an impressive performance night after night. There's not many players in this league that you can say that night after night he does something impressive. And he's on one of those roles right now where you just, you're like, wow, I can't believe a 50-point game. Wow, another triple-double. It's like that every night, it seems like. And there's just not a whole around him at the moment. So they're getting the most out of him, put it that way.
Didn't he have 50, 60, and 51 in the course of like five games or something? It was something stupid like that. Like three 50-plus point games out of a five-game stretch. It's like, what?
Yep. I actually have that stat here for you, Bruce. But my word, I thought World B was going to steal it from me with impressive, but I went with insane. So here's the list of players to average 45-plus points on 45-plus points on 59-plus% shooting in a five-game span since the ABA and NBA merger. The list is Michael Jordan and Luka Doncic. That's it. That's the list for you. Just insane. 59-plus percent shooting in a five-game span, 45-plus points. Mind-blowing.
I remember having a conversation about who was the youngest guy that you knew was going to be in the Hall of Fame. For me, it was LeBron James. I knew LeBron James was going to be in the Hall of Fame when he was like 20. Luka might be number two. Because, I mean, I think at the age of 22, we knew he was going to be in the Hall of Fame.
How long until the Hawks start just kicking themselves, or have they not stopped kicking themselves over the last couple of years for that deal? It didn't seem like it early on, but now it's clearly becoming a one-sided. It's getting to be a one-sided deal, or at the very least, a lousy trade for the Hawks.
You know, when Luka used to always bitch and moan to the referees, he wanted every single call, and it was annoying. I mean, it made me not enjoy watching him, but he's cleaned a lot of that up now. I mean, he knows he's going to get his calls. He gets hit a lot, but he's not whining about all the non-calls. And I think that that's really made him better and gotten him more respect from the referees as well.
He's shooting better than he's ever shot in his career. He's taking more shots than he ever has, and he's shooting better. That's a recipe for MVP.
Yeah, and I think a lot of credit has to go to those that are surrounding him. I think Tim Hardaway is having a better season. He's definitely been shooting the ball much better as of late. Spencer Dinwiddie's actually been a very good acquisition for them. And I think some of those guys to help space the floor is you know, adding to his shooting field goal percentage. I mean, we talked about Giannis last week and not getting the shooting around him, and his numbers are starting to drop. And on the flip side, we're seeing Luka improving his shooting numbers because those around him are being a threat from the outside as well. So I think some credit needs to be given to, you know, the Tim Hardaway, Spencer Dinwiddie's, and when he's healthy, Dorian Finney-Smith.
Here's a question for you guys real quick. I want to ask you, who do you think has a better supporting cast around him, Joker or Luka?
Joker?
Ooh, that's a great question. I would say Joker as well, for sure.
Well, I'd say it's close, though. I think Aaron, we were singing Aaron Gordon's praises not too long ago. You want him in the All-Star game.
I do want him in the All-Star game. Right. Yeah, that's why I took that.
Who else are you going to put in the All-Star game from the Mavericks outside of Luka? There's nobody else there.
No.
I would probably go with the Mavericks as well, but I think it's a interesting. It makes you think a little.
Yeah. All right. Topic number three. I'm really looking forward to this one because I'm going to throw you for an extreme loop, I think. Latrell Sprewell.
I got to feed my kids. I need more money.
For me, it's excitement. I was my first season doing the NBA Tonight Show was when he had his incident with PJ, and it was a real mess and everything. And they end up in New York, and he really spearheaded their run to the NBA Finals that first year in '99. He excited the crowd like very few have at the Garden, at least wearing a Knick uniform. He was Mr. Excited. It didn't end well there. It rarely does when you play for a Knicks team these days with Dolan running the show. But he was excitement.
Okay.
I remember Craig Kilborn. He was a Sports Center anchor a million years ago, went on to host The Daily Show or whatever on Comedy Central. He thought he was so freaking smart about the NBA. He said to me one time that he thinks – Latrell Sprewell is like the next Michael Jordan. I'm like,
whoa.
This is when he was on his first team, Golden State, right? Was that his first team?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, nah.
He had moments like he was, but you get to be the next Michael, you gotta have more than moments. You gotta be at the Kobe level to be compared to Jordan. Spree was one of many who had moments where you look like Michael, but those don't get you to be on his level.
You know, PJ and Latrell have spoken since then, but I don't want to misquote PJ or anything, so I'm not 100% certain. I know they spoke. I don't believe Latrell ever apologized, though, for that. But they did speak, and they did have sort of a cordial conversation, so it wasn't like anger or anything, but there, if I remember correctly, there was no apology given.
Wow. Surprised to hear that. I thought if they were on speaking terms, you would at least go ahead and admit a past mistake to kind of move on. But for me, I'm actually going to go off the court with my word, and it's going to be spinners. Much like his game, the spinning 20-inch rims are a thing of the past. I'm not sure if you guys remember that, but the Sprewell spinners were on a lot of rap videos, and a lot of the ballers in the 2000s had the spinning chrome wheels, and that was actually patented by Latrell Sprewell, which he then went on to have his own Dada Supreme shoe that when you would take a step, it would spin. He'd had spinners on the side of the shoe, almost like a kid's light-up shoe, but with spinners. Never had a pair, and glad I never have to admit that I did. But that was one of the things that always stood out to me about Latrell as well, was just his off the court persona, personality, and in that 2000s hip hop culture. He definitely was a big part of that. So just wanted to throw out one last random throwback name just to keep you guys on your toes. But that was a lot of fun.
That's quite the impact he had on the NBA between choking the coach and the spinners there. That's quite the legacy. When they put him in Naismith there up in Springfield, that'll look good up on the wall there.
Maybe he can be in the NASCAR Hall of Fame or something.
There we go. We'll have to see. All right, and then moving on to our best bets discussion. I want to talk about some teams that are good bets at home and teams to go ahead and avoid on the road. So let's start with a good bet at home. My number one team in that regard is the Memphis Grizzlies. They are 15-3 at home compared to 8-10 on the road. And the Grindhouse, as FedEx Forum is commonly known as been a notorious tough place to play for years, back when Zach Randolph was there, Mike Conley, Tony Allen. And Memphis continues to hold up that reputation this year. They've been extremely tough at home. On the road, they've kind of been a wild card. But I like them at home. Another team that we've already talked about at home, it's in the altitude. It's the Denver Nuggets. They're 14-3. It at the Ball Arena, and despite having the best record in the Western Conference, they're just a game over 500 on the road. So for bettors out there, focus in on Denver Nugget home games, where the Nuggets look to use that high altitude to their advantage. As for teams to avoid on the road, the Golden State Warriors. Who else? They are 3-16 on the road. That's good for the worst record, road record in the entire league. And with Steph Curry out, still not a bad bet to, you know, bet against the Warriors on the road and how they'll handle adversity without their main ball handling leader.
4-15 and we'll be on the road with their spread on the road, the Warriors.
With their spread?
4-15 against the spread on the road. So
not good.
It's not that they're just bad. They don't even cover.
Yeah, good point. Thanks for throwing that in there, Will B. And for this last one, Will B, you're going to need to plug your ears. Another team to avoid betting on the road, the Orlando Magic. And, you know, of course, while we've given them a ton of credit for competing this year on this podcast, most of that success has come in Orlando. So this young Magic team is just 4-13 away from home this year. And as we said, they've been struggling both home and away as of recently. So definitely avoid them at all costs when picking out a parlay or debating whether or not you should take the gamble. So that is today's betting segment on the 48 Minutes Podcast.
Can I throw in one little thing here?
Yeah, of course.
Best road team against the spread. Give me your best guess.
Best road team against the spread. Boston?
No. I'm going to go Sacramento.
Sacramento is second. Boston is just over 500 on against the spread. The New York Knicks are 13-6 against the spread on the road.
Wow.
So, yep. And I just thought I'd throw it out there because it was the Knicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we haven't talked about the Knicks in a couple of minutes.
Part of Mike's contract with the 48 Minutes franchise is that we are contractually obligated to make sure to talk about the Knicks at least once in every show and to say something nice about them.
I didn't say not have to say something nice about them. Now, they gave a lot of ammo the other way, too. When you run the way they're run, there's plenty of opportunity to pick on them. But we'll go with the positive for today.
Highs and lows in New York. We know that. They're always a roller coaster ride. So, Will B, enjoy the high ride right now. You know, you never know when the slide might happen.
Hey, no matter how good the Brooklyn Nets are, the Brooklyn Nets could win 5 championships. The Knicks will always be New York's team.
That's the way I look at it.
It's true.
Yep. It's totally true. I can confirm that just from my time with the Knicks and the energy around the city. It's all New York Knicks basketball. So, gentlemen, any final thoughts on today's pod? Anything we might have missed or games you're looking forward to or players that have caught your eye?
Well, my closing take has to do with one of my favorite topics, which is international players. Okay. So my closing take for tonight is, 4 of the top 5 leading scorers in the NBA as of Tuesday or Monday are international players. Luka Doncic, 34.2 points a game. Joel Embiid, 33.2 points a game. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 32.1 points a game. Then you got a random Yank in there, Jason Tatum at 30.9. And then number 5, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, a native of Canada, at 30.8 points a game. And we're not even including Nikola Jokic in that group when it comes to incredible international players. He's 17th in scoring. He's number 6 in rebounds, and he's number 3 in assists. And here's a fun stat that Mike Freer probably knows, but the rest of the world might not. Although Jokic is 17th in points, He's only 42nd in field goal attempts. Okay, think about that. 17th in scoring, 42nd in field goal attempts. That is what we call efficiency off the scales. So that's my closing take. The international takeover continues.
I'm going to give a shout out to a guy on the Heat that doesn't get as much pub as he probably should. I started the show talking about a guy who doesn't get as much pub as he should in Siakam. And I think Bam Adebayo down in Miami is having another really good year. He gets some recognition. He's made the All-Star team before, but Miami is kind of flat. It's always looked at as Jimmy Butler's team. Tyler Hero has become a name there. And then Bam just comes down and gets more production every year. He's, since Thanksgiving, only two players are getting more points in the paint than Bam, and it's two of the biggies, Zion and Giannis. Bam's averaging 18.1 per game in the paint. Now, how many players are averaging that much, period, since Thanksgiving? And since Thanksgiving, he's one of five players that's averaging 20 points a game, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, while shooting over 50% from the field. So the other four are Sabonis, Giannis, Jokic, and AD, who's going to fall out of this list pretty soon because he's just hurt and he can't be in there. But that's pretty good company. We talk about those other four on a constant basis, but we don't talk about Adebayo nearly enough. And so I want to give him a shout-out. He's really having another outstanding season on a team that is just – they're up and down. They're just up and down.
All right. Good points there, Will B. I was actually going to use my final thought as an opportunity to pose a question to our listeners out there, and maybe you guys can chime in right now. But as I mentioned earlier on in the show, the Suns, with their loss today, they now have 18 losses. Golden State, heading into their game tonight, have 18 losses. And I think the Warriors have played one additional game, so they have one extra win. I want to know, a week from now, who do you think is going to have a better record, the Golden State Warriors or the Phoenix Suns? We're just talking 1 week, small sample size. Suns are on the road. Warriors are at home tonight. But, you know, if our listeners are out there, I'd be very curious to see whether or not you're going to put faith in the Suns turning this around quicker, or Golden State?
Well, I know that as I was doing my research for today's show, Golden State is in the midst of an 8-game homestand. They've won their first four at home. They've got four more at home, including on Monday night against Atlanta. So I think there's every reason to believe that they'll probably win at least three of the next four games, maybe all four. So my answer would be, I think Golden State's going to catch up to him. I'd say Golden State.
Will B, who are you taking?
Oh, I would say the Warriors too. I'm taking the Warriors. I think they are, as Bruce mentioned, the first thing you do if you want to look, where are they playing? They're an incredible contrast, which boggles my mind this year, how they get to be so dominating at home and so inept on the road. It's absolutely mind-boggling to me. Not just because there's a big contrast, and there is, but we're talking about the defending champs. I mean, they haven't had Steph Curry for a while, but they did have him for a good part of the season. It hasn't been that long that he's been out. And just the idea that you could be a defending champion, so good at one arena and so bad everywhere else, is just hard to fathom. But they are playing better defense, and eventually I think they'll catch up with the Suns. If you're looking for a train wreck, the Suns are speeding at a much faster pace than the Warriors right now.
So there you have it. Bruce and World B have given their take. They're hitting the panic button on the Phoenix Suns and taking the Warriors. But I am curious, to our listeners, feel free to drop us a comment on the podcast or on our social media pages. We'd love to hear from you guys. And that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes podcast on Believe. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back for you on Friday. But in the meantime, be sure to download and subscribe so you don't miss out on any episodes. And hope everyone has a good one. Bruce, World B, take care.
So long, y'all.